Armand Demel with you.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti with you also.
And we are both with you with the positive mind.
Yes, we are.
WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, and a whole bunch of things to think about. And today is a celebration today. Today's just another one of those things. You know, a little while back, we were doing some research on a thing called the Posit Mind Program, which was a brain training program, how to train your brain to learn more information. Fabulous program. I'm doing it myself now. I'll give you the results when I'm finished. I've always been curious. Roberta, have you always been a curious person?
Very curious, Armand, yes.
Curious about everything? I mean, you're...
Everything seems fascinating when you don't know it. And then when you know it, it opens up another door, and there's no end to how much one can learn all the time.
One of the things I learned about myself early on was wherever I have an aversion, meaning wherever I judge something or wherever I push something away or whenever I find something disgusting, there's something for me to learn in that area. Now, a lot of people, you know, you could examine prejudice, for example. If there are people who feel certain ways about people of different color and they feel certain ways about people of different ages. Some people think just because you're old, there's something wrong with you, you know. But wherever you have an aversion, you're going to find information about yourself. And I remember as a kid, this was in my 20th year, I was cleaning a kitchen counter, and I saw a mold growing on the counter. And I was, ugh, a mold. I think I'll clean this up. And I was going to get the spray out to go clean it up. And before I did, I was lucky enough to have a piece of a microscope handy. As everybody always has a piece of a microscope handy. I had the eyepiece of a microscope handy, so I put it down there and I looked at the mold. And I said, oh my gosh. And it was incredible. And this mold was filled with colors. It was gray, but it had colors. It had purples and reds and greens, and it was glistening, and it was alive. Mold is a living thing. And I remember this fascination that, you know, if I had not stopped to look at this, I would have never entered this world, this microscopic world of living things. It was from there on that I found other things fascinating. Have you ever had an experience like that?
Sure, Armand. I used to call it the fungus among us. My friend, fungus among us. And yes, I used to love to look at these things. Sometimes they grow inside a bottle in the refrigerator, even the anaerobic ones. And they are alive, and they are really pretty to look at. True.
So one of the things about curiosity, and I know the latest thing about your hobby, Roberta, is you like photography of flowers, and you do beautiful stuff. You do fabulous stuff. And you get into the stamen and the pistils, and you're right all the way in there. You're doing as close to it as you can get. You know, and
it's fascinating. The flowers, the tiniest one that we never even notice because they're so small, non ti scordar di me, they're called. Forget me not. Those are tiny. You don't even see them, hardly. But when you magnify it, it is spectacular, beautiful, absolutely perfectly looking, amazing work of art.
So where does that take us? That takes us into, this is how I want to feel about somebody else in my life. This is the way, you know, I mean, this is it. You want a definition of romance? A fungus among us. Romance is you find somebody else so fascinating that you want to look at them from every angle, not just from their physical selves. You want to look at their mind. You want to look at their soul. You want to look at the way they breathe. You want to look at them when they sleep. You want to look at them the way they snore, if they snore. I mean, love is fascination with a partner. I think it's a really good description, because when you're no longer fascinated with your partner, when you no longer think your partner has anything to offer, you get bored. Your partner keeps taking you to the same hotel room over and over again. You say, oh, I got to have something exciting. So you want to go off to Europe with somebody else or something. You know, it's not, It's you've got to keep finding the excitement and the newness. Now, this brings us to what we're talking about today, which, believe it or not, is a form of death. We're going to go there.
Well, that's interesting, too, actually.
Yeah, it is. Well,
very
because curious. Because it's interesting.
Right.
But let's stick on this track for a moment.
Okay.
Let me tell the story. There's a story about a person who had migraines. Migraines, and migraine is one of the most misunderstood of all the ailments out there. Migraine is not a headache. I mean, a headache is the wrong word for it. It is an ache in the head. It is a pain in the head. It is like a knife going through your head. Someone described it to me recently. If you peeled off the top of my skull and my brain was available to the air, the pain of the air coming over my brain is what a migraine feels like. I mean, that's pretty descriptive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, these migraines are getting worse and worse. And along with the migraines, you know, because migraines happen, and we know that they're related to serotonin on some level. We're going to talk about that. We know they're related to serotonin. And so what people do is they try to treat it, and they do all kinds of things. And the best thing you could do is go to a migraine specialist. Now, migraine specialist would be a physician, an MD probably, who has had loads of experience and access to all of the latest information. Hopefully it's somebody who can look at you, evaluate you individually, look at your case, look at your history, and say, this is a unique person, let me give them this. But unfortunately, most physicians are doing trials. And a trial is somebody says to them, listen, if you prescribe this one particular drug, we'll give you a reward because we're studying this drug. And so if you go to a migraine specialist, he says, here's the drug I want you to take, because he's doing the trial on that drug. I've had this happen. I've seen this happen many times with people. A Neurontin was a famous one that everybody was giving out for a while. So if I want you to just picture there's a migraine specialist who's giving out this drug for one reason, and then he gets another trial where he's told, and give out this other drug. And this other drug is Zomig, which is called triptans, which is one of the drugs that they found most effective in relieving migraines. And he says, and when you take this other drug, Effexor, because it is known to raise your serotonin, we're going to talk about that, and you take this triptan, if that doesn't work at preventing the migraine, and then we give you, in back of all of this, and if none of this works, we'll give you Demerol. Demerol is going to kill the pain. Well, that combination. So I decided, you know, somebody decided to do some research on it, and he did some research, and he put all three of these things in the internet, and he comes up with a red flag from the FDA. FDA warns, never prescribe triptans and Effexor together, because they can kill you with a thing called serotonin syndrome. Well, this is a funny thing, because the physician prescribed two of these, and how could the FDA have such a red flag warning up? If you put it in the drug interactions, there's drug interactions you could do on a computer, and you put in these two, and there it is. Don't prescribe these two together. So how could this physician prescribe these two? One of the best known physicians in the field.
Armand, I think that when it comes to this sort of medication, you are absolutely right when you're saying that the doctor is doing a trial, because in fact, when you're dealing with the brain and the nervous system, the whole thing is so complex that no one can imagine from the beginning what else is this substance going to do besides what we know it does. And then they start to prescribe it, and then they watch what happens. Then if a couple of years or a couple of months or a couple of weeks later, they start to see a lot of the same symptoms happening, side effects, I mean, in people who are on that medication, then they put out a warning saying, oops, here's a side effect we did not know about, but that, you know, watch out for. So when you deal with the nervous system, the complexity is such that no one can possibly imagine how that substance is going to affect people, because they don't know what else people are on, what are they taking, even in terms of supplements.
So there we have one of the magic things you're saying, Roberta. that it's not, we're not just here to yell at physicians. That's not what we're doing, because, you know, equally liable to the physician was the pharmacy who filled both prescriptions. It is incumbent on a pharmacy. The pharmacy should warn you. If he's filling two prescriptions, he says, oh, these two things don't go together. It's his job. So I went to a lawyer friend of mine, called her up, and I said, hey, what if this person wanted to sue because she almost died from it? She said, well, you could bring a suit against the physician, who will then turn it over to his malpractice suit. And what will happen is, in about 7 years of completing her testimony, where they will go after her background and her life and open it up sideways and do everything they can to discredit her. And if she doesn't settle within 7 years and they drag it out through trial, 7 years later, they may give her like $200,000 less the percentage that goes to the lawyer. And it's going to be a giant grief to go through it. Okay, that's the deal. That's the way the system works. So the system does not work that you can hold a physician responsible. You can, but it's a pain. That's not the way the system works. The system works to say to you, my friends, you have become the source of the information, and not you. It is incumbent on you, not it is your responsibility. If you want to trust somebody, go ahead. But really, become fascinated by your own brain, by your own chemicals, by what you put in your body. Let's take black cohosh. Let's take Sam E. Let's take all of these other things. Let's talk about serotonin. Let's just stick with that one for a moment. Okay, Roberta?
Sure.
Serotonin syndrome, it's called, which is what happened when you combine Effexor, which is an SSRI. Now, I'm going to explain that. A serotonin reuptake inhibitor has a special meaning. Reuptake inhibitor means it stops you from getting rid of the serotonin. Right, Roberta?
Yes.
Reuptake means once you have a hormone working, or once you have a neurotransmitter working, or once you have something working in your brain, it goes to work. The body is terrific. The body cleans it up after it uses it. So if you want to use adrenaline, right? It gets used. And then it changes its chemistry once you use it, because you send electrons through it, it's changed. Now you've used that, the body cleans it out and sends you more. All the neurotransmitters are like that. Dopamine, boom, you use it and you send it out the way. So you reuptake it means you sweep it out of the way. Okay?
Once the desired effect has been achieved, the body recycles the raw material it has used to make these neurotransmitters and hormones, because the raw material is very precious. So the body is not about to discard it. It recycles it. And these medications work by preventing the recycling.
Preventing the recycling, meaning of that, the one that we want to increase.
Yeah, meaning that, let's say, the serotonin reuptake inhibitors prevent the recycling of serotonin, and they leave it in the gap in between nerves. So it continues to stimulate the nerves even beyond the point where the body would stop. It continues to stimulate the nervous activity.
So a reuptake inhibitor is doing two things. They found two ways. If you're missing something in your body, you don't have enough vitamin D in your body, we can either give you more vitamin D by sending you out in the sun or giving you a supplement, or we can inhibit the loss of vitamin D. By inhibiting the loss of it, therefore you accumulate more. This is what serotonin does. Serotonin, as you get older, you lose it. As you get older, serotonin, estrogen and serotonin are linked somehow, and somehow as you get older, you lose this serotonin. And he's found that with depression, people have low serotonin. So they said, how are we going to get people to get more serotonin? Well, we'll close the gate. Imagine a dam. There's a river flowing in a dam, a river of serotonin, right? And the trouble with it is the river is too low. It's too weak. What are we going to do? We're going to build a dam. We're going to stop the river from leaving. And of course, the river builds up. And that's what serotonin does. It builds up because now you've put in a reuptake inhibitor or a dam. But what happens when it builds up? Well, it goes to a certain level, and hopefully it just reaches right to the shore and between the air and everything else, that's as far as it goes. Unfortunately, when you add two chemicals, which is brand new in our lives, which is the new science, now you put two chemicals in your body, they have an interaction on each other. So now, it's not that you've added more, but the interaction of one and the other. When you take a triptan, which people take to avert a migraine, to abort a migraine, and you add that, suddenly it puts something in the water that makes the water more tumultuous, and the water is now flowing over the dams. And then the person feels pain and panic, and they feel bad, and they're getting dizzy, and the migraine is getting worse. The head is pounding. It's getting worse. You've taken this remedy, and it's worse. So you take Demerol, and Demerol specifically, and a lot of other painkillers specifically, even raise the serotonin even more. How would you ever know it? You look at a blood test, and you see estrogen levels are through the roof. And you say, oh, wonder why that is. The testosterone is low. Oh, wonder why that is, just curiously. But the doctor who did the blood test, who saw these things, never called up and said, hey, there's something in your blood test that's funny. It's up to you. It's not only up to you, but you are becoming this wonderful available knowledge. You love somebody? Go research it. Go find it out. How do you do it, Roberta? How do you... If you knew that somebody was taking Effexor, and you knew that they had a very high serotonin level, what would you do in your, besides the knowledge you have, which is tremendous, besides the books you have, which are fabulous, what would you do with your computer? You have Effexor and you have this serotonin. What would you put? Would you put two words and three words? What would you do?
Well, the first thing is I would choose a search engine that works well, and some work better than others.
Which one do you like?
I generally, with Google, I'm very happy. It does really well, but there are some things that Safari does better. So depending on what I'm looking for, I would try one or the other, or both.
Mm-hmm.
Firefox, what's it called? Firefox, Mozilla, it's another one. So one has to find a search engine
depending on the information that one is looking for.
But
for the sake of this, what I would like to do is simplify the choices.
Right.
To as many as we can to one.
So let's say Google.
Good, thank you.
Because that's one that everyone knows. Google, so first you go to Google. Because if you're, let's say you're on AOL, let's say you have an AOL account, you're not naturally on Google. You have to go there. So the first thing is you enter www.google.com. Then it opens into a window. That's the Google window. That's the search engine. And it asks you, what do you want to know? Now you enter the two words, let's say migraine and Effexor. It's a better idea to put an and in between them because the search engine deciphers that as the question that you want to know what these two things do together, what information is out there where they find both of those two words.
So now, wait, let me just say it. So now what you've done is, I don't think Google asks you what you want to know.
Google just gives you a window.
That's it. And that window.
But that's the question. I know.
But I just want to make sure people understand. So now you put in two words, and you get these two words, and what Roberta says is you put in the and, because if you put in the and, it's saying, could you link these two things for me? Otherwise, you might get an article that has something about migraines in it and something about Effexor in it, but it might not be related to both.
If you put an and in between, it's going to look up all the articles available on the internet that have those two words often enough that they would be articles related to that subject.
Okay, now you go to that, and then a few things will happen. Nowadays, new things happen on the internet. If you pay money and you're a salesperson, they give you the highest priority of what appears in a Google search. So if you do a Google search, the first thing that comes up is somebody selling you something. The very first one I find is usually somebody who's selling the drugs that you're talking about. And this is okay. It's part of the system. It's what you learn. They may have information in there.
Actually, I was going to say the first thing I would do is actually look at the medication insert from the company that produces it.
But we're not there. We're on the computer.
No, but that's what you're saying, that the first thing that comes up in Google will be the package insert. That will be one of the first things that will come up.
You would find, in other words, what you would find is you'd find the company who's selling the medication.
Right.
Don't avoid them just because they're selling it. Read the package insert.
That would be the first thing I would do.
Because that's where they have to do that, because legally. But I wouldn't do that because you know why? It's tiny, tiny print, and it's so much information that it confuses me. Something else will come up. I would go there, too, eventually. But I would go there, and I would search all the different connections. And then a thing comes up that I love, and I know you don't like, which is these kind of boards where people, message boards, where people join together and they form a group. And in their group, the migraine people talk to the migraine people. And if you listen to them and you listen to what they have to say about a particular thing, you find a lot of good information. So there are people out there like you who are searching for information about something, and they have information they give, and it's usually not crazy information. It's usually good information because they're not selling anything. And then you go further and you find further links. Like if you looked up Effexor or Triptan, it would trip you over to serotonin syndrome, and then you would read about serotonin syndrome, and you would learn. You have to go further searches. Each one takes you deeper and deeper and deeper, and the way the computers are designed nowadays, you could do it practically with one click. Because they highlight a subject for you, you click on it, and you could find further information. Wikipedia has been phenomenal in providing information, although not all of it is totally accurate. It's phenomenal, provides you information. Let's talk to you just a little bit so that we can excite you about some of what we would discover. And let's talk about serotonin syndrome. Do you want to talk about what the symptoms of it are and let you know that it's potentially fatal? It is a dangerous, dangerous thing. And that you could get serotonin from bananas and plums and other things which we're going to talk about, and especially sugar. People who have serotonin problems who eat sugar, especially at night, are going to stay up because their serotonin is going to raise like crazy. Let's talk about serotonin syndrome, Roberta.
Well, it has a way of manifesting that could be more or less severe, but it starts with anxiety, sweating, tremors, restlessness, confusion, a sense of doom, a sense of that something bad is about to happen, aggression that is not justified by circumstances. In fact, it was believed that some of these shootings that go on in schools might be related to the fact that these kids are on these antidepressants from the time they're so young that it has affected their nervous system to such a degree that they have this aggression. But anyway,
you know, Roberta,
that could be serotonin syndrome.
You know, they also thought the Salem witch hangings were all serotonin syndrome.
That
was from the fact that the grain was stored.
Uh-huh.
And the grain, the way it was stored, it was rye, I believe, was stored, and it grew a fungus, and this fungus...
Well, that's actually a hallucinogen. You're talking about the thing that grows on rye that
mold.
Then becomes LSD, or uh-huh. similar to LSD. That's a hallucinogen, but serotonin at high levels can give hallucinations too, in fact. So it really, the range of side effects, the range of, not side effects, signs and symptoms is so enormous that it's difficult to pin down, also because every individual is going to have a different range of symptoms depending on what's there.
There are some that you could see, and one that you would see is the hypothermia. That's one that seems to be prevalent in 80% of the cases.
Hyper,
you get too hot. What you sweat.
Hyper, okay. Yeah.
Sweating is hyper, right?
Yes.
Your body temperature your pancreas send, is it your pancreas that sends a signal? Where's the thermometer?
In the hypothalamus.
In the hypothalamus. So the hypothalamus sends a signal, you're too hot, you gotta sweat, you gotta get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells, and it raises body heat. See, so one of the symptoms, if you
fever.
Have this uncontrolled fever or mm-hmm. sweating, either one, another symptom you get is this what's called muscle rigidity. Now, in 51% of the people, muscle aches. Muscle rigidity to the point where the muscles just got locked like crazy. Now, so you go to, let's say you've got this, you can't sleep, and you've got these tight muscles, and you feel restless, and you got migraines, and you go to a doctor, and the doctor says, meditate. You got to learn to meditate. Or
you found doctors that tell you to meditate, Armand?
Well, let's say you go to a holistic doctor. And he says, you got to learn to relax because your muscles are tense.
It's all in your head.
I'm not putting them down. I understand. I understand what they are saying.
I'm not either. They are really confronted with an enormous dilemma here because patients now, Armand, have you noticed that the ads now are such that the ad itself for any new medication, for any medication, the ad itself tells the patient what to ask for from the doctor.
Yeah, right. Go ask your doctor about Cohib.
Right.
And ask him, is Cohib right for me?
The patient shows up and says, doctor, I want this and this and this and this and that. So the doctor, we can't blame them from everything because they're humans too and they're trying to do the best they can and they are inundated with information.
And they also have liability if they say no.
Right.
If they say no and something was available that could have helped you, they have liability.
Right.
RR, it's right in there.
But see, the serotonin syndrome used to be fairly rare in the past.
Right.
But now it's becoming more and more prevalent because a lot of the modern medications that people are taking cause an increase in the serotonin levels.
How many people are on SSRIs in the United States? I guess like 40% of the people or something.
The exact amount, but I think we're not too far from that, from 40, maybe even 50, because for one reason or another, even for PMS now, they prescribe them. But what I was going to say was, let's say a person is on antidepressant, on birth control pills, on thyroid medication, and on a mild sedative, then the person gets a cold. So now they go to the pharmacy and they buy NyQuil and a decongestant. So now on top of all the medications they are on all the time, consistently, now they're going to be taking a couple of over-the-counters that are also interfering with serotonin disposal. So now you have...
But how would you know that?
How would you know? That's right.
How would you know? Is there anything on the label that says watch out?
No, there isn't. Nope.
So, now, what about sugar? Just very quickly, because I know a lot of people snack on sugar.
Well, that used to be, in fact, Armand, how people used to self-regulate serotonin. They used to eat sugar. Because the moment you eat sugar, and you said to make it short, so I won't explain how it happens, but somehow the tryptophan, the molecules that are precursors of serotonins get pushed into the brain, and now the brain has a sudden influx of serotonin that was not there before. So there's the moment of, you
that's
finally feel
that's
good.
Why women love chocolate. It's like...
And men...
And women love
and
men.
And children and...
And women love children.
Everybody.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Roberta Maria Atti, we're excited about research and we're excited. We're hoping to bring to you ways that you would look at things, like I did last Thursday when I brought you four people that sat around and just talked about stuff. I want to show you how we look at things. We're going to be back with you in just a little bit, play a little music, and when we come back, we'll continue this discussion. Thank you. Mama and Victor Juris in No Way Out.
Oh, perdula direzione.
What language are they speaking?
I do not know.
Come on, Roberta, you know any? How many languages do you know?
Portuguese?
What is it?
I don't know, Mama.
That's our secret. We're having a contest here at the Positive Mind. Here it is. Here is the challenge. Here's the invitation, my friends. Here's a song that you've heard many times before. I want you to hear the song one more time. You hear that song, you know that song. Very familiar, right?
Yep.
Well, I would like to see all of you musicians out there and you singers submit to us this very recording, this very music, played on another instrument. Bass. I'm going to ask Cricket to put it on bass. I want to hear it put on any other instrument. People play it on whatever, their tenor saxophones. This is music that was developed by Chuck Greenberg in a group called Shadow Facts. And so I've been using it as my theme for now 15 years, and I knew Chuck, and I asked him his permission, and he said, sure, it's yours. And here it is. We have Shadow Facts' Dream of Children. You could look it up on the internet. You could get a copy of it, and then you can make us your own version of it, including, get ready for this, I want you to make up words for the song that fit the radio program. You know, that's like nice. I was thinking about words like the positive mind, like, you know, don't look no further, but find the positive mind, you know? It's where you'll find. In words like that. It's like a classroom on air, you know? Just things like that. So I think it would be fun.
Great idea.
So we would love to get from you lyrics, and then we will have somebody come in and sing it, and maybe we will re-record it, and we'll always have Chuck Greenberg to thank for this. 212? No, don't call us. Send it to me. Send it by email, and you can send it to us, or you can mail it to my office. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, trying to find always new and exciting things. And there, that's new and exciting. That's a nice old thing. So imagine this, my friends. Imagine that there is this thing called serotonin syndrome, which brings us to another point. There are small levels of it, you see? Serotonin syndrome. Now, serotonin, we were talking about, Roberta, you say when it spikes, it's dangerous.
Yes, when it's too high, it's very dangerous. One of the first signs of it is aggression. And what was it, that experiment whereby the monkeys, they were working with monkeys that had had a part of the brain removed, a part of the brain where there was a lot of serotonin, and these monkeys were fearless and angerless. So serotonin, it's a very, very essential regulator, not only of mood, but of emotional states. If a person has a dysregulation of serotonin, the first sign is that their emotional expression is off. They fly off the handle, they are depressed or aggressive or hyper. Children with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, they have lower levels of serotonin relatively to other neurotransmitters. I'm sorry, higher, I meant. So that the hyperactivity is also related to serotonin levels. And in the past,
and that would make sense. That's why the sweating, you know, all of this sense that there is more, like the body has an urgency to it because you have more serotonin than you need. Because in the past, Roberta, you were going to say in the past, right? Go ahead.
I was going to say in the past, it was rather simple for doctors to manage a serotonin deficiency because they would just give people tryptophan. They would prescribe this amino acid. It's a protein that you find in food. And then the person would take this amino acid as prescribed. And this amino acid is the raw material that the body makes serotonin from.
Yeah, well, I don't want to fill you with too much information. The main thing is, in the past, there was a way of fixing it because it wasn't chemically induced. You see, it's the chemical induction. It's what we do to our body when we take things, including natural substances, including SAMe, including St. John's wort. Now, St. John's wort, part of the reason it worked for depression was it lifted the serotonin level by inhibiting the disposal unit.
Right.
And it did the same thing. Dangerous drug. Dangerous if you combine that drug with a number of other things. And it's like they all, I don't mean to just alert you and warn you, I'm just saying there's a new world of chemicals that we're introducing in our body, including our nutrition. There's new stuff that we're doing to ourselves.
You see, I think, Armand, that when we figured out through technology is such a wonderful thing, isn't it? That we can isolate single active ingredients from a plant, from a food, from anything. And then we can use that substance, the concentrated, isolated substance, to affect something in the body. Wow, what a discovery that is, because it does save lives in certain situations. It's an amazing discovery to be able to isolate things like that.
There used to be one called Doctura. I remember in Mexico, there was a cure when your man cheats on you. You get Doctura, and you slip it to him when he doesn't know it. And that Doctura would make him have so many hallucinations, he'd wind up in bed terrified, and he'd stay in bed for about a week. After that, you let him out, and he would never cheat on you again.
You better buy some life insurance before you do that, because you could kill your man, too.
Of course you could, because Doctura, by the way, was now synthesized, and it's now ketamine, which isn't both an anesthetic and a popular street drug.
But see, that's true for everything.
Let's say
even sugar, right? Mm-hmm. Sugar. Let's say sugar cane. Okay, you chew on a stick of sugar cane. You can chew on it for hours, and you get this nice, constant inflow of sugar that comes through the juice of the cane. But it comes with B vitamins, enzymes, minerals, coenzymes, cofactors, water. Now you take all of that out, put it aside, remove everything but the sugar. what do you have now? You have a very, very concentrated, very active ingredient.
Potent drug.
Potent, yes, because you've removed everything else. And then we play with these things, because some of them are a lot of fun. But what we're not realizing, maybe, Armand, is that, you know, we need to take into account that the body may not be used to such concentrated substances, and to mix and match especially is where the danger lies.
Well, if not even the danger, you know, Roberta, one of the things you could look for is life enhancement. I mean, yes. I mean, if somebody you love gets sick, certainly you want to be unrelenting. I mean, you know what it's like when you have somebody who is dying of a disease and you give up because you've tried everything? And you try everything. And luckily, the internet has allowed you to keep trying, to keep looking, to keep searching, to keep finding, you know. And it gives you some kind of hope. It gives you some idea of what you need to go through, including if you should accept the death. It includes that. People will be on there talking about that as well. So I think we have been given this gift. Given the gift of having more access to more information than ever before. And it's good for us. It's a nice thing. It's good to learn. Now I want to take it one step further, just so that you know, when there is a chemical interaction that takes place in the body that creates some kind of a malfeasance, or something bad goes wrong inside of you because you've combined two things, the obvious thing would be stop taking it. No. No, because there have been many bad things associated with the sudden cessation of chemicals. You even know, many people know what happens when they stop smoking, how sick they could get. You know, you could get sick. It's suddenly your entire immune system was dependent on the cigarette, on the nicotine, or whatever it was that was in there. I know people who were not sick while they smoked, and then as soon as they stopped smoking, they got drastically sick for a period of time. Well, all of this is like it. For this, for example, serotonin syndrome, you do not stop taking the cause of the serotonin syndrome immediately, because if you stop it, you go from this artificial high of serotonin, right? Now, and I'm going to go back to the floodgates, you now have dammed up all the serotonin. It's like you break the dam. And now you not only just, you know, you're lowering it. It's not you're lowering the serotonin dam. No, you break the dam if you stop taking the medication. And God knows what happens to you after that. And some of that could be fatal, too. The heart, it's hard for the heart to handle it, you know. Oh, all this going on inside me. So what you've got to do is you've got to research how have other people who wanted to stop stopped. Well, on this particular case with serotonin syndrome, if you research it, how have in the chat rooms, you could find 200 to 300 articles on how people tried and failed or tried and succeeded. It's amazing. It's the gift that we are given now. And with this gift, I invite you, my friends, to become as curious as Roberta kneeling in front of a forget-me-not.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You really...
Yes, I do. I kneel in front of forget-me-nots, yes.
I saw the great sign the other day, Roberta. It was great. It was a sign for sale. It said, if you leave me, I'm going with you.
That's a great one. Armand, based on what you just said a minute ago, I wanted to explain the concept of upregulation. Neurotransmitters and hormones, which are really similar one to the other, are very, very, very concentrated, powerful substances that the body produces. And when we take in from the outside in a medication or even a supplement, an herb, a vitamin, whatever it is, something that artificially increases the levels of this neurotransmitter or hormone, what does the body do? It does the logical thing. It stops producing it itself in order to balance out this inflow. So that's one of the main reasons why Armand is saying don't just stop, because your body now is adapted to the artificial intake, and it has regulated itself to that level. So if you withdraw it suddenly, well, in some form or another, your body could collapse. Either nervous system could collapse or the cardiac system or whatever. So be careful. Wean yourself off whenever you take yourself off.
If weaning yourself off is the answer, because in some cases you have to substitute it with something else. You know, in other words, it's not just, it would seem, stop the medication or wean yourself off the medication, but just research it, look at it, find it. Heroin. You do heroin. Heroin replaces the endorphins. It basically tells your body, do not have to, you don't have to give me any pain-killing substance because I'm giving you a pain-killing substance. Morphine. You know, if you take, I remember once I had an illness or I had something wrong with me, they gave me morphine. I couldn't believe how amazing I felt from the morphine. And the feeling of the morphine was, hey, I don't have to pay attention to my body anymore because it's taken care of. There is no possibility I could get hurt, is the message that I decoded in my body. Now, if you take heroin and you get off heroin, what happens? People go through what they call cold turkey, which is this screaming, agonizing, painful what? Every bone aches, everything aches, everything hurts, and it's what happens with serotonin withdrawal. Everything hurts for a period of time. In heroin, the reason they have these programs is so that while you're screaming and going through it, they can give you something to kind of help you through it. But most ways that you got to get off it is to use whatever you could know, whatever you could find out that would help ease that trauma. So all of these things that you may be doing, my friends, whatever it is, if you have a friend who's taking an SSRI who may have a serotonin syndrome, give them the consideration of serotonin syndrome. Now, there's one more point, Roberta, that I want to make about this, is I'm on the receiving end of this, too. As a health practitioner, I very often have people walking into my office having diagnosed themselves, and they're waving papers at it. So somebody could come in to me, and they're wondering why they get angry at their mother, and they wave a piece of paper that says, look, I have a thyroid malfunction. And I have this, and it's clear. I have a pituitary disorder. I have hypothyroidism or something, and they come in waving this. And so I look at it, and I know, oh, no, I know they just picked this out of a hat, because if they had that disorder, I would be able to tell that right away. So in my mind, I say to myself, oh, they don't have what they think they have, but I don't want to knock them down for doing their research. When you walk into a physician's office with information about what you've discovered, he or she, but it would be mostly the he's, would say, especially if you're a woman, would say to you, oh, yes, that may be well and good, but he's ignoring you. He's not even paying attention to what you're saying. Because they get so used to people coming in this way nowadays because people have so much information. Eventually, the physicians will pay attention. Eventually, they will truly pay attention because you are going to become the best source of information because you know your body. But most people who come to them waving papers have not done enough research to go into it in depth. So you could understand their position also. And what I'm saying is I, as a practitioner, know what it's like to diss somebody who comes in with information that, you know, I just know the feeling. And I'm sure you must know the feeling, too, if somebody...
Oh, my goodness. People always come to me, and they want to tell me how good they've been because they have not eaten any butter. Or how good they are because they don't eat egg yolks, only egg whites. So I have to take them all the way from the top and start over. A little bit of information sometimes is worse than no information.
Well, you know, I don't think that's true anymore. But I think a little bit of information nowadays...
I hadn't finished that sentence yet. So I was saying that a little bit of information that you acquired that is disjointed from a holistic perspective, meaning from a broad perspective on the subject, I try to get the history of something and then I go and get the details. Because if people have done something for a few hundred years, I think that's a good clinical assessment to start with. So generally, if you are examining something that has just come out, be careful because there's no history. The history is always very important. If one needs to learn about serotonin, thank God there's a lot of history. And I think that that's where I would go immediately to learn, well, how has serotonin been utilized and what has it done and what's going on now in relation to its history? So, you know, yes, I agree with you, Armand. We have to have a lot of patience with ourselves.
And but with our physicians.
What are our options? You
well,
know?
Another option is, you know, it would be clear to me that if I cared for someone who was sick, who had a disorder, and that it was misdiagnosed by a doctor, and the doctor actually did something that exacerbated it, by the time I went to that physician regarding the person I cared about, I'm going to be angry. And I'm going to wave this stuff at him and practically shove it in his nose. Look, an FDA warning that says you should not have done this. But that's not going to get any kind of collaboration. That's going to get a defensiveness on the other side. I think the thing that we have to do is teach our physicians that we, the patients, are knowledgeable, kind, and are willing to collaborate, and we are students. Yesterday I went and I was sitting with Majid Ali, and I was asking him certain questions as a student. And Majid's great. Majid would teach me everything I want to know. He says, you know, and here's this and here's that, and this is the way this works and this is the way that works. He's doing a project on blood pressure, which is going to be a phenomenal project. It's going to be available for BAI listeners. So, but he's one of the few because he's talking to a friend. And I know if somebody came to you, Roberta, with questions and they said to you, Roberta, here's this thing I learned about fat, you know, about eating butter. What do you think? And they collaborate with you. And then you say, nah, I don't believe that thing about that. And then they say, but look, here's the evidence. And you looked at it and you said, well, you know, this may change my mind. Because that's the way I would be. And what we want to do is set up a field where everybody collaborates. Like we had here last Thursday, where we had four people talking and collaborating. You want to set up a field that everybody's invested in the same thing. Everybody has the same interest. And everybody feels like, you know, they're all part of the same team.
Definitely, Armand. I think that every blessing, the best things that have happened to humanity have always been also the most dangerous when used, you know, with agendas other than the well-being of the users. So I think with the internet and the availability of information, it's the same thing. But I think it's a blessing that I would not give up now that I have found it. I mean, anything on earth that one wants to find out is right there. Where else have we had this? So I agree with you that it's just amazing.
Well, Roberta, we just found out that the bottles that water come in, you know, Fiji water and all those natural bottles are contaminating the planet. So we found that all this water that we were buying, which we thought we were doing a good thing.
That's the irony of it.
Right? We thought we were doing a good thing because we're now drinking enough of this water. But the leftover bottles are creating more contamination than anything that tap water could do for you.
But
therefore, now wait.
Isn't like that with everything, though?
That's where I was going to go. What if they find out that our computers are contaminating the planet?
But they are.
I know. Now I'm in trouble.
Why?
I don't know, because I don't want to lose my information.
I know. You know what I'm doing? I am actually saving.
You're printing everything.
Yeah,
I know
I'm
you.
I'm saving all because I know the day is going to come when we're not going to have the internet anymore. I just hope it's not going to come any day soon. But I want to be ready that day. I have stacks of stuff, and I don't know. I mean, it gets really difficult to store all this information. And that's the other reason why I try to learn and memorize as much of it as I can, because when else have human beings had access to this much knowledge, Armand? Never, nowhere.
And it's so exciting. And if you don't take advantage of it, I fully understand. I understand the person who says, I'm one of those few people in the world who have not.
I respect that.
I respect
admire it.
Well, you know, you're over there and I'm over here and I love you too.
I admire it, Armand.
This is Armand DeMille. And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
Yes, this is Roberta Maria Atti.
Roberta, how can people get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me by writing to Roberta at creativehealthsolutions.org.
Roberta at creativehealthsolutions.org. And you can reach me at Armand at thepositivemind.com. Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. If you want a copy of today's show or you want to get in touch with me about the contest, 212-757-4488. Be back with you tomorrow at 1.
I'm going to sing it, Armand.
You're going to sing it?
I'm going to sing it.
And Roberta will sing it when we get the words.
Definitely.